At the Hacienda Hotel.
Hello, kids.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Looking good.
All right. I don't know. I see a little resemblance.
Look at this. This is a fancy little thing.
Don't make fun of mine.
It looks like a robot. This one.
It's a taser.
Or a drone. Just have it floating here as it's like.
So how what was your process of getting involved with this? Did Brad contact you?
Yes, Brad contacted. I met Brad on Lincoln Lawyer, and we became friends and wanted to find something that we could do together. And I think I was doing, I think it was like 2 years ago or so, and I was doing the play in New York, and he said, I have it. I go, what do you have? He goes, I've got, my mother wrote this. And I said, your mother wrote this? And he goes, yeah, but trust me, no, she's a good writer. I said, oh, okay, all right. And so that was almost like, my mother's got a barn, and my sister has costumes. And I went, wait a minute, what are we doing? But I read it, and I went, hey, you're right, she is good. And that's how we, I said, there's an element that I really want to bring out, though. This book, from Bob's point of view, is focused on the caper, on the operation, which is very detailed. And anytime you take something from one medium and go to the next, you have to take this and put it through like a juicer. And you get the juice. And it takes a big bag of oranges to get a glass of juice. A movie is like the juice. You have to take what we consider to be the best elements of that, because you cannot film this. So I said the element that I really want to bring out is Bob Mazur, the man, the husband, the father, because that's what fascinated me. When, as an actor, slipping into a character and playing a character is commonplace. I've been doing it for almost 40 years. But for him, if he makes a mistake, there aren't any do-overs. He could be killed. With that kind of tension coming home every night, how does that guy become Bob Mazur, the dad? And, oh, would you help her with the math homework? Yeah, how do you then, oh, yeah, honey, carry that one. And oh, we're making sandwiches for the kids' lunches tomorrow. Let's sit down and have a glass of wine with your spouse. And how was your day? And he can't say a word. No, it's fine. All he can say is, yeah, it was good, even if it wasn't. So he's constantly taking in information, stress, tension, and not able to release it. Thank God he was a runner. That was way he can get it out, get it out, get it out. But I needed this film to show more of the stakes at home, the emotional stakes. And I thought that, and Brad and Ellen agreed, let's really bring that out, and so that we would have a solid foundation of the plot and the emotional risk behind it.
And Benjamin talked about going back in and hearing the tapes. Did you go and listen to the tapes? Did Robert give you tapes?
Yeah.
And what was that like for your research?
Fascinating.
Process? Yeah.
You're, and they're not always the best quality, so you're leaning in desperately trying to live, because they're always shrouded in some, in a suitcase or in a planter or something. Oh, it sounded something like this. So you have to, you can't listen to it too long because you're concentrating so hard on trying to. And basically what I was doing is not so much of the details. What I noticed is the depth of informality that the two, Roberto Alcano and Bob Mazur, or Macella at the time, had, you know, ribbing each other. Oh, come on, what do you mean? They were acting like friends. Bob will tell you, never lost it in his frame of mind what he's going to do. He's going to arrest this guy. So he's acting like the friend. For the sake of the movie, the theatrical license is to allow Bob to relax a little bit of his doggedness as a law enforcement officer and expose more of the fragility of a human being, of that dichotomous life of doing something he knows right, and it's his job, and he's going to arrest this, but your body is saying, but I like him, and he's, I feel for them, and I don't want to hurt them. So you can justify it intellectually, but emotionally, I think you're battling.
So what kind of undercover guy do you think you'd make?
Well, now I think I'd make a pretty good one. I'm used to being undercover. But only pretend. Oh, you meant real. Oh, no. No, because for that very reason, that I have a bad day, I go home, and it didn't work. And I think you know what? It's terrible. We're going to have to reshoot that scene because it just didn't work. That's the repercussions in my world. And I can fully divulge everything to my wife, whether she wants to hear it or not. But he didn't have that luxury. And I was, early on, I was going to be a police officer early on in my training. I thought that's what I was going to do. And to be a detective, but not necessarily infiltrate.
What cured you of that?
Girls.
What was the hardest aspect of
girls? Girls in theater class. I was like, I'm 19, second year in college, and I went, you mean there's that? That's available? And they outnumber boys like 8 to 1, one of my first scenes in my first acting class, I read it. A boy and a girl on a park bench making out. Oh my God. Oh my God. I read it again. I was like, so my job is to make out with a girl. Oh my God. You know, it's like, this is possible. And so once that turned my head around, I realized, okay, if I'm actually all those initial emotions and aside, if I'm going to do this, I need to learn how to do this, and I mean really do this. So that's what drove me deeper into very seriously into how does one become an actor?
And what did you do?
Because you're a hard
actor. You know, one is the biggest thing is to be able to be vulnerable. We spend all our school time, usually. There's the occasional kid who is like, wow, way out there and already exposed by who they are and proud, and it's like, who's that? But they're also open to ridicule and being ostracized and being embarrassed and all those things. And most kids want to kind of like be with the pack and figure things out, and all through high school, I don't know, I'm wearing the same clothes as you are. No one's going to point me out. And then after high school, you go, oh my God, I need to be me, and I need to open these floodgates and celebrate the uniqueness of me. Am I unique? Am I, you know, and just kind of go inward and through therapy or through self-awareness. And I was coming of age, you know, in the 70s when it wasn't self-awareness, it was indulgence. But the 80s was different. You can either go to further indulgence with the cocaine and the craziness of that, or you can go, remember all the self-help and Marianne Williamson and Leo Buscaglia and all?
Right.
I mean, Wayne Dyer. Exactly. You could have that path, which I think was very healthy. Self-exploration. Who am I? What makes me tick? What is my raison d'être? You know, what is my purpose here? And so I had to get serious, and hopefully, you know, it's age appropriateness. You go through the teens and the early 20s, and you are so self-centered. And then you go, okay, enough of that. Now I have to grow up and be the person I want to become.
As an actor and being set the record, Emmy Award, so and the same, I feel like Bob is a really good actor because his job. So what did you learn as an actor from his real acting?
It was very, very easy for me to get into being another character. What I learned from Bob, what I had to take on was the was the specificity of what he had to do. He's a guy, as you see in his manner and demeanor, he is a triple check, quadruple check kind of person, crossing T's and dotting I's and making sure, which was nice because Amir wasn't. He was a fly-by, he was an impulsive, spontaneous guy, and together they made a very interesting team and are friends to this day. And I think they found that style, we have it in our movie that they were kind of knocking heads a little bit, which is a more interesting dramatic structure. But the truth is that they got along pretty quickly right away and formed a bond right away and realized that each one brought in a specific set of abilities that the other one did not have. Amir was, in the role you see Johnny Leguizamo play, was that kind of chachi, kind of let's get into it kind of guy, and he was the perfect person to bring them in. He was a lure. Kathy Ertz was also a lure. She's a very attractive woman and is a very macho driven kind of environment. So that was also a lure, and we were like, we're fishing. We're bringing them in slowly, 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 bring them in. But like fishing, you know, oh my God, they spit the hook. And if they did that after 2.5 years of work, we're in trouble. And if they spit the hook, you could also be dead. So the similarities and differences were very clear to me going into it.
Other than making out with women in movies, and your career is so diverse, what do you think the craziest thing you've ever done in a movie, either that it's like, I'll never do that again, or I'll totally do that again, and maybe you still do?
An actor's life is filled with risk. It's certainly emotional risk. And what we're talking about first and being open, I'm willing to be exposed and naked, emotionally, physically, because sometimes you need both. And those are something that I accept. Because in order to truly tell a story sometimes, I have to be completely honest with myself. If the intention is to make an audience feel embarrassed for my character, then being exposed, being nude, is one way of doing that. And like in Trumbo and that sort of thing. We talked about that scene a lot. We need to show the dehumanizing factor of going to prison. And Dalton Trumbo was stripped of his dignity, stripped of his freedom. And we wanted to show that visually by being stripped, quite literally. So I knew, I said, let's do it. I was full frontal on everything. And I told Jay Roach, I said, I think the thing to do is I think we need to get other men of different colors, different shapes, different sizes, half a dozen of us in a holding cell. Naked, all of us naked. And when you're among that, you really are, it's like, okay, we are all stripped of our protection, our garb, what we need to feel comfortable going out in society, but these men aren't. So there we are, 6-7 guys in a holding cell, all naked. I said, you're going to have to cast this because no one's going to volunteer this. The background actors are not going to say, yeah, I'll do it. I was totally wrong. I went with Jay to talk to the group of extras who were not told anything about this. And I said, I'm going to have to go with you because we're going to have to convince these guys. You know, I'm going to do it. So Jay just said, we're doing a scene in a holding, in an admission, you know, admitting into prison. And it requires nudity. Who among you would like to be volunteer to be nude with Bryan Cranston?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what? I had to. But and I don't mean they're like chiseled bodybuilder guys. Like, yeah, man, I want to show this off. I mean, there were all shapes and sizes. And it was like, wow. Okay, let's do this. And it was really... You know, and you have to prepare for that. You have to prepare yourself for that. Mm-hmm. I had to prepare Brian to, because once you have a possibility of embarrassment, your real personality comes in. I had to let that go. So Dalton's personality came in, and he was scared, and he put on what we were talking about. He put on a good face for his wife, and it's going to be fine, and I'll be out soon, and I love you, and all that. It's going to be good, kid. Take care of your sister. Take care of your brother. That scene, and then later, he's scared.
So what, did they all put towels on until they dropped the towels?
No, we were all naked.
You all were walking around?
No, we were in a holding cell, just naked.
I have a question. I just forgot my question. My question is this. In the film, you're living a duplicitous life, right? And you have to be one way when you're undercover and another way when you go home to your family. So in real life, as Brian, did you have any of those conflicts of letting the character go when you go home and now you're Brian?
Sometimes they seep into your life. As you're still thinking about the character, an actor's job begins when you read a script. I first read a script and from an objective viewpoint. And then if I know because I haven't said yes yet. And then it's a great, very good sign. Just like any of us reading a novel, if you're walking around the day and you go, oh my God, you're thinking about that story, that's a good sign. It's staying with you. Mm-hmm. And the character, if the character just starts coming to you and you start to imagine what he would look like and that sort of thing, that's a very good sign. That's what happened with Breaking Bad. That's what happened with, a lot of other characters, Dalton Trumbo, LBJ. So those are indicators for me. And I'm just, my receptors are open to those things that I can identify well-written material and when something resonates and if something seems honest to me or something that I can bring an honesty to that story, then it's a very good sign and I'm open to it. I have a spouse I've been with for 30 years and we met on a TV show. She was an actress at one time. And she tells me if I'm if I'm full of myself, she goes, oh, wow, look at you, being so-and-so. Don't bring Dalton home. Don't bring Dalton to, if he's irascible or something. You're kind of a jerk, and it's like, oh. So she has no gumption.
Was it easy or difficult to shed, LBJ, for example, or Trumbo, or even this character, or Walter? I mean, were any of them really tough to especially with LBJ, you have a certain accent and a way that you carry yourself. Were there times when you're like, I can't get rid of this guy, he's still in me,
In some ways, it's interesting because the way the film works is that we've done this, and we shot this over a year ago, mm-hmm. So you have to reacquaint yourself to the story because you're on to other stories and things. Some characters grab a hold of you and they don't want to let go, and you enjoy being in their shoes. Mm-hmm. And especially when, the LBJ was such a constant. I did 5 months of performances, 8 shows a week on Broadway. And then there was a little bit of time off, and we worked the script, and then I slipped back into those shoes for the movie. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. It's fun to stay in that character and play and that sensibility, that era. Mm-hmm. And how the sexual politics were at the time and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I would probably, I would say, well, I love that blouse. Look at you. I think you should wear that color all the time. I love that. Turn around, doll. that's because that was acceptable at the time. Yeah, so I just stayed into that character and that kind of kind of power. Okay.
Your popularity is huge. I mean, people of all ages love you. It's like,
wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, my friend.
And one thing Bob said about that he noticed about you is that you always know where you came from. Did that help a little bit in your influence to come back to Power Rangers?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I did dubbing voices for Power Rangers, the series, 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. And but I can tell you that I would not have accepted that role if the script wasn't good. There's no loyalty to a history that I, something that I did 35 years ago. They're completely changed this tone. It is not the television series at all. It is a fully realized updated, reimagined approach to telling this superhero story. And I hadn't really done a superhero thing, so I was kind of intrigued. Sounds interesting. Let's try it.
Have you played the president? Can the next president be a woman or an empresario, an entrepreneur?
Can?
Yeah, what's your take?
Well, of course. Of course.
Having been the president for five months and then making a movie.
Oh, well, you mean as the president?
No, as you.
As me?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand that question, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, well, you have a little knowledge of what the presidency is like and the responsibilities.
Yeah.
Having played the president.
Yeah, there is no room for a charlatan in that office.
You're such a good lead. Is there a trick to modulating your performance to be part of an ensemble? Because this has such a great supporting cast as well. Is there any kind of magic trick or
No, I think what you do is you first take it in from an objective viewpoint, that you understand the story. And then from there, you compartmentalize it and say, okay, what is my contribution to this story? And if it's the lead, you have a larger overview. But if it's an ensemble, you go, okay, I know. Oh, my character brings this to this story. I got it. So you work on that and present that with ideas and suggestions. I like active actors. I don't like to work with actors who show up on the set and go, okay, where do you want me to stand? Where do you want me to do? What do you want? What do you want? I come in going, here's what I've been thinking. Here's what I would like to try. Here's. And it's a collective. That's true collaboration when everybody charged with the storytelling process is involved. And that means extends to crew as well. Mm-hmm. A prop guy can come up and go, hey, wouldn't it be a good idea if this happened? Oh, wow. Yes. That suggestion helps tell our story. Nicely done. What about the hair? You know, in that era, the hair style was... good. So you encourage and embrace everyone, every department's involvement. And that's how it really comes together.
Thank you. We have to break.
Oh, I had one more.
What's your one more? You want me to sign this?
I was going to say, you know, so many Hollywood marriages dissipate.
Dear.
What is your secret to balance family and career?
Well, I think that's it. It is balance. It's not allowing yourself to get unbalanced for too long. Now we talk about balance. It's never balance in the sense that every day is completely balanced. No, it's like, oh, I've been working a lot, so I have to do this. It's finding the balance over the course of over time. And the other thing is, you know, marrying the right person.
Yeah. Do you stay in touch with Vince Gilligan?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're friends, so we see each other constantly.
Any chance of a Better Call Saul cameo?
It's possible.
Just in the background, or?
I mean, I don't know.
With no clothes.
I would do anything for Vince. So if he called, it would certainly be something that I would say yes to before the conversation was over.
Awesome.
Let's see. Where can I?
Which season is that?